Hi, everybody. This is Steve Savitsky, and welcome back to Savitsky Talks. And today we have Rabbi Stanley Fishman, who is the Director of General Studies at the Ben Porat Yosef School in Paramus, New Jersey. How are you, Rabbi Fishman?
Okay, just fine. I'm gonna beg off and just say Mister, if you don't mind.
Okay, no problem.
Thanks.
Okay. Okay, so you've written a nice book that people are talking about.
Thank you.
And 7 Steps to Menshud.
Correct.
How to Help Your Child Become a Mensch, an interactive guide for parents. So let me first start with a basic question. I mean, whose responsibility is it? Is it a combination, parents and school? Is it really mostly parents? Is it mostly school? How do you make a kid a mensch?
What a great starting question. As I say in the book, and the introductions, over the times that I have spent having been a principal in yeshiva for 35 years, you often hear parents express a sense of exasperation. Why can't the school make that a kid a mensch, or my kid a mensch? They're very frustrated because the behaviors that they see in general then are not reflective of someone who can be called a mensch. In a moment, I'll get to why it's becoming more of a problem. But in terms of the answer to your direct question, it's a combination. But I feel strongly that the fundamentals and the principles of the home are the most important ones because they are the foundation for that child in that family. And it's the job of the yeshiva to reinforce the values that the parents hold dear to them. So it's a partnership. But the problem is that we face such pressure from the outside culture. It just it trains our children to behave in ways other than menschlich, and parents are frustrated and worried about it. And so I thought that this might be of help.
So we train our. I mean, is it society that's kind of forcing people not to be a mensch? Is that what it is?
Well, it's simple. In my opinion, it can be reduced to just examining what's happening in our general culture in terms of entertainment and music and certainly interactive electronics and all of the ways that people are communicating and all of the ways that they forward the values that they hold in esteem. And if we pay attention to that music, for example, and those programs and the movies, whatever it is that children are engaged in, they are not reflective of values that are anything close to what we see and expect in Yiddishkeit and what we would define as menschlich. And so that piece is getting more and more difficult, and the parents' job is extremely difficult. Even all the children in yeshiva, regardless of how good the school is, they are exposed to values that are not reflective of menschlichkeit.
Okay, so now shouldn't the schools be teaching? I mean, like let's say there's a curriculum, curriculum called there's Tanakh, there's Gemara, there's menschlichkeit.
Right. I'll tell you what I found, which is very interesting. This is in the general world of education, a study that I believe was published as recently as October. They studied some of the values instructional programs in public schools and public school systems, and they found that it made absolutely no difference on the behavior of the children. As I say in the introduction of the book, even if it's a yeshiva program, it's somewhat artificial if this week's going to be Hachnasat Orchim or whatever. It really has to be something that is reflective of real life. And the way we can do that, at least in terms of my book, is to have the parent and child discuss the values that, as I say, that they hold in esteem, and discuss how they can employ those values and those behaviors in the school setting. So I offer a lot of fundamental information regarding the 7 steps. The 7 steps are 6 mitzvot and 1 pasuk from Nach.
Right.
And we speak about what they mean and how we can implement them in the school.
You're talking about implementing this in the school or then in the home?
Yeah, I'm going to explain.
Okay.
The discussion that takes place includes a long list of examples of how to perform these mitzvot, these behaviors in the school setting, but it's one that the parent conducts with the children. If that's the case, and a child comes home and speaks about somebody who's been made fun of and who's suffering at the hands of classmates or, you know, whatever the case may be, the parent and the child can discuss strategies for how to respond to that. I'll give you an example.
Okay.
The fifth step is Asita Hayashar V'Hatov. You should do what's right and good, and we learn from that the concept of Lifnim Mishirat Hadin, going beyond what you're required to do. And so what I did over the 10 years that I taught this in the fourth grade classroom in more than one yeshiva, the children give me examples of what can occur that is a challenge to acting as a mensch, and then what they can do to better that. So I give there are four choices to consider. There's the first choice, which is to join the people who are doing the wrong thing. We know that that's wrong. There's a neutral choice. And then there's a third choice. For example, if kids are calling one another names because they can't shoot a basket at the gym, they may say stop. And the chances are that the other kids won't listen. So we suggest to the children, think about a way that's better than what's required and figure out what you can do to make that happen. So if a child says to the child who's being picked on, let me show you how to make that foul shot, then he's going beyond what's required. And when he can learn behaviors like that, and when you discuss these situations at home, it can become part of his repertoire of responses to negative behaviors.
Okay, so now are you gearing the book to a particular grade or age level?
My feeling is that while it was written right smack in the middle, with the fourth grade in mind, which is where I have been teaching it for many years, it can certainly be subject of discussions for children younger and children older, all the way up to the pre-adolescent and early adolescent years.
Okay, so it's anywhere, elementary school children mostly, that's what it's meant
mostly
for.
Mostly elementary and junior high.
Okay, elementary, junior, till K, 8, whatever it is, and so on like that, right?
Sure.
Okay,
yes.
So let's just take, I know you have different steps, so let's, for an example, let's take an example of the ways of the Torah are ways of pleasantness and all its pathways
right.
of peace, right? Derechecha, Darchei Noam, right? Okay.
That's the sixth step.
Okay, the sixth step. So tell me, what would you do? How would you teach this? What would you do?
Okay, so first of all, we have to make it clear that the steps do go in order of difficulty, and so that's next to the last. As we explain, once you know how to behave in certain ways, then we have to figure out how we do that in a pleasant and peaceful way, which is what the Torah requires. In fact, the Torah does require that when we perform mitzvot, we do it in a pleasant and peaceful way. There's no such thing as a mitzvah that is required of us that is going to be done in a non-peaceful and non-pleasant way. So that's the start. That's the introduction.
Okay.
So what I would wind up doing is discussing some examples, some stories that I have heard. Each one of the steps has several different stories, and we discuss that, and we determine how in the world you can become a more pleasant person. However, more specifically, within that step, I speak about the following.
Okay.
I speak about politeness. We have a list of suggested behaviors for being polite. We speak about smiling. Why it's so important for us to try to have a smile on our face all the time. So there are practical steps to follow, and hopefully they are part of that conversation between parent and child.
So how long does it take? I mean, is this a session, two, or what?
Okay, so that's a great question. The fact of the matter is, what might be best suited for parents is to take some Shabbos time to just discuss. First of all, the introduction is our sources from Chazal. So there's a lot to talk about, and then there are the stories. It would be super for parent and child to read one of the stories and discuss it. For example, once again, going back to step six, the Derechecha Darchei Noam, in part of the first section, we talk about the Kiddush Hashem. have a really nice story that I tell if I can share it with
you. Okay, sure. Well, okay, I heard here. Sure.
Sure. I heard from Rabbi Krohn. There was the father who was driving his expectant wife to Mount Sinai Hospital from Brooklyn. And when he got to the Battery Tunnel, he zipped through without paying, and he had enough time to yell to a policeman he's taking his wife to hospital to give birth. So when he returned and he got to the toll plaza, the toll plaza clerk said, "What did you have, a boy or a girl?" And he looked incredulously and he said, "How did you know?" He said, "Well, the policeman told me that there would soon be an Orthodox Jew that's going to be going through the toll plaza, and he's going to give you double the toll." And I tell the children that's an example of someone who is Mekadesh Shem Shamayim, and people are able to reflect on it. This particular policeman has an association with Jews that, oh, these are honest people, these are fine people. So to behave in a way that elicits responses like that is a Kiddush Hashem, and it's an integral part of the whole notion of Derechei HaDarchei Noam.
Mm-hmm. Okay. That sounds good. You know, one of the questions I have also is, why can't we use this for older kids? They certainly could use it.
For sure. So can adults.
That'll be the third book.
Right. As far as older children, the fact of the matter is that the challenge is greater because the influence on their behavior is even stronger. And it's dramatically more difficult. And my feeling is, although I'm not associated with high school education, that's where the Rebbeim come in, all of the teachers, because that requires a lot of role modeling, a lot of opportunity for discussion, for informal discussion, for guidance, personal guidance between members of the staff and the students. They need to see enough behaviors that are reflective of Menschlichkeit, and they will, even if they don't demonstrate it immediately, they will learn to reflect off of those behaviors. The role modeling is critically important. However, if the parents even were to use these seven steps in discussion with their children, that can be extremely helpful, and I'll tell you why. The six out of them are mitzvot.
Right.
They can be discussed on many different levels. I'll explain it in the following fashion. I have run parenting workshops that are reflective of the notion of the most important principles that a family might have. What are those principles that you would like your children to remember and never forget? Once you have a chance to discuss those principles with your children, then when a behavior comes up that is not reflective of those principles, that can be a discussion. Instead of getting upset with a child, say, in the Cohen family, is that really the way we speak to our sister? Or when you see something like that happen, what is it that the Cohen family says you should do? And so by utilizing the notion of principles, the dialogue can begin even in preschool and run all the way through young adulthood. The steps are applicable for all time.
Right. But have you noticed a difference, in people who've gone through the program, so to speak, and other people?
Well, I don't. I do not have a measured assessment process. But I can tell you the kind of feedback I get from parents,
mm-hmm.
Who tell me about some of the things that a child may have said or done that is reflective of what they may have learned in class. The parents have been extremely pleased with the content of the discussion that emerges when the children talk about those processes. I've had teachers say the same thing to me. I've had teachers tell me, I had done this program several years ago in the Westchester Day School, and teachers who tell me that when the children are asked in the eighth grade when they're about to leave, what are the things that they remember most, many of the children will say they remember studying the seven steps to Menschlichkeit.
Really? Wow, that's great.
Yes.
That's amazing. Well, listen, I think it's a great thing. Let me ask you another question, something that
sure.
always comes up. We live in the greater metropolitan New York area.
Right.
I travel a lot out of the New York area, spend Shabbosim in wonderful communities. And people always tell me, and I see it myself, that the kids who live out of the greater New York area, let's call them out-of-towners, okay? Mm-hmm. They seem to have more of these skills, and they are more of a mensch, it appears, than some of the kids who are here. Is that true? And if it is true, why?
It's not an area of expertise, so I'm going to make it very clear that I'm just going to offer an opinion.
Okay, that's fine. No problem.
If you live in an out-of-town community, you tend to have perhaps a single school or a single shul. And as I understand from people who are out-of-towners, they devote themselves greatly to these institutions. And everybody feels a part of them, and everybody wants to see success in their smaller Jewish communities. We don't have that sense when we live in the metropolitan area. I guess you could say that perhaps all of us, adults and children, become a little bit jaded. There's always something better, there's always something new, and there isn't that sense of commitment either to the institutions or to one another. If the community is small and most of the people you associate with are in your own shul or your own yeshiva, perhaps that's one of the reasons that you might see that difference.
I see. Okay, well, listen, thank you so much for being on the program, let's hope that everybody starts to really read it and make their kids into more of a mensch. We could certainly use it. It's a Kiddush Hashem, so thank you so much for being on the program.
My pleasure. Thank you.
Okay, bye-bye.
Bye.